podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing,
Denise.
Denise, yes. You know what? As you were saying that, it just occurred to me that I'm thinking that maybe one day you think I'm going to say, and I'm Dee Dee. And this will never happen. I'm just letting you know. Never going to be Dee Dee.
That was a figment of your imagination. I do not want you to ever be Dee Dee, please. I have like a completely different picture in my head of what Dee Dee would look like. You don't match that.
I feel like none of my nicknames match me. Nah. You know, like, I'm just glad I got, you know, I got a semi-modern name for my family. I'm glad about that.
You know, there were a lot of think pieces happening on 440. And I feel like all what happened was people listened to our podcast. They listened to our podcast and then they went and wrote their blogs.
See, now, if I could write. Oh, my goodness. I need to become literate again. We're going to do this.
Okay. Well, you know, Black people aren't literate. Apparently, white people aren't either. There was a white man spotted at a KKK rally now. Ku Klux Klan white supremacist rally sporting locks.
Okay. So he might have been infiltrating, though, for the Black bloc.
He had on all the pins and he had the tattoos and things. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. The tattoos don't come up.
No. So the question then begs, is it cultural appropriation to wear locks as a white person? Can you be a Klansman and proudly rock your locks?
Let me tell you a little story.
Okay. Story time.
Story time. I lived in Berlin. I'm chilling. One of my closest friends is a promoter of a hip hop event. Not a promoter. I'm sorry. He books. And, you know, so I'm in the spot. KRS-One concert. I'm made to be there. I'm in the front row. I'm singing all the lyrics. And it was this like solo, you know, kind of, you know, lanky kid next to me. Seemed like a good guy. These two white dudes in the, like, kind of like the standing room only. So it's kind of a row. Behind us are clearly at the wrong event.
Mm-mm.
But they felt that they were at the right event because what they were doing was essentially trying to start a mosh pit. At the KRS-One concert, they knew none of the lyrics, they barely knew English, and then they was trying to fight people. Like, randomly fight people.
Mm-mm.
And what I have seen in the hip-hop circles in Europe sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, is white folks that adopt hip-hop as hardness. And it really doesn't even matter what the lyrics are, right? So it's just adding spice to the whiteness. It's not about like, okay, the content, Kendrick Lamar, I really, really, you know, familiarize myself with where he's coming from. And I totally agree with what he's, no, it has nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, that sounds hard. So for them, you know, a Jay-Z and a 2 Live Crew and a, you know, I mean, like, I'm just saying like a 2 Chainz and you understand, like Amigos, it's all the same, you know? They can have radically different content, but just like almost like a native German speaking person that doesn't fully understand the context and the language, a white American doesn't either.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's where I'm coming from with that. So as far as the cultural appropriation, I feel like a lot of people wear locks because they have this idea of what locks say about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I'm not like, I'm not like your average white. I'm like a spicy white. Like, you don't even know.
Oh, no.
You don't even know. Do you know what I mean? Like, where I come from, blah, 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 blah. And I could totally see white races with locks. There's no contradiction for me.
Really?
None. Whatsoever. Hey, now the story time. I'm at a festival. I'm working. I have some friends that have a food cart. Super duper people. It's America. I'm doing my thing, right? So I'm over there. I'm like, you know, they used to make the bomb veggie fajita joints and then the fries. And I'm just doing my thing. This is how I get into the music festival, right? So, you know, they had their boys coming to help them too. White boy with locks. He got a black wife, two biracial kids. They all Rastafarian. Everybody got locks, right? So I'm like, all right, cool. Life is good. Let's make it happen. Let's get these fries together. And I'm just trying to live my life as a person on this planet. So I'm in the back with him at a food truck and we're doing our thing. And he asked me, he's a white American dude, have you ever been to Africa? And yeah, no, I had never been to Africa at that time. So I'm like, okay, where's this going? And then he starts talking about how he goes, you know, goes to Africa on the regular, does these tours, and it's just so amazing, and we need to blah, blah, blah. And then proceeds to tell me that, you know, me as a black person in the diaspora, I definitely need to go back to Africa and blah, 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 and da, da, da. So, I mean, like, and he considered himself like a massive progressive, and he was doing it on some old, like, let's build up Africa nonsense in his head. But I'm like, you're just a white dude telling me to go back to Africa. Like, we're in North Carolina at the time, too. So it's just like, you know, I could go get a rockabilly dude telling me to go back to Africa. I mean, your reasons might vary, but you're saying the same thing.
But the reasons are essential, aren't they? Aren't they the differentiating factor?
Intent versus impact. Intent versus impact. So, yeah. KKK, locked, Lactafarian, Waspafarian, whatever he was. Yes, I see him, like, leading the rallies. I see him, like, I have studied them, and I know their ways. And then coming back and telling the KKK, I can totally see that.
Well, what about the people who say, well, you know, Lox has a long history that dates back to the Vedic scriptures with Shiva wearing Lox. You have, you know, Samson and the Bible wearing Lox. There is evidence that maybe even the Vikings wore Lox.
Okay, but was Samson white?
No.
Okay, but was Shisha white?
Shiva definitely is not white.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed the name. I said Shiva. Shiva was not white. So Shiva ain't white. Samson ain't white. What are they talking about for real?
Vikings?
No, actually, that was debunked. Historians have been like, y'all need to stop playing games. Like, hygiene was an issue. Vikings are not up on the boat with some matted hair.
Germanic and, tribes.
Right. Like, they're just not. Because that's the only. Look, I went to a reggae festival. In Germany. Look, I have studied them and I know their ways. I went and I was doing like a photo thing on Lox and how they're made and white people here, because I was fascinated. There's like people that special, like that's their business. It's like they do Lox, they're locticians, but just for white people. So it was a loctician and her client, and they let me like take like several fast format pictures of like the whole process. And I'm just like, because it's actually the crocheting. It's like just a lot of like that's how it's done professionally. So I'm there. I'm just like fascinated because I have locks and I never do anything like that. We get to talking and she's just like, yeah, you do like this. She's giving me instructions. And then she says, but you know this because you do this with your hair. And I was like, no, I would never do this with my hair. She's like, well, how does your hair lock? And I was just like flabbergasted, shocked, hurt, like. My hair is meant to lock. I have 4C hair. I wake up and like so much of me having natural hair before locks was about preventing my hair from locking. All I'm doing now is making them locks neat. It's not a matter of will they or won't they lock. They gonna lock, you know? So it was just like, what? It blows my mind. The level of ignorance just blows my mind.
I guess that answers it. I have no more questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's move on to South Africa, where we're going to stay for pretty much the rest of the podcast.
Do it.
So a lot of people talk about Black Twitter, and Black Americans specifically will assume that Black Twitter is like a Black American domain. But no. Blackness is universal. And Black, yes. And Black Twitter South Africa showed up and showed out this week because a photo op for Miss South Africa, Demi Lee Nell Peters. She was, you know, at an orphanage feeding the beautiful Black babies who are HIV positive. And for whatever reason, she was wearing latex gloves. And that interesting fact was not lost on anyone. So obviously, there was an issue. People called her out on it. Why is she wearing latex gloves when she's visiting an orphanage for HIV positive children in Joburg? Like, what was this about? She quickly intervenes in the way you probably shouldn't and, you know, hops on Twitter and says that everyone is misunderstanding her. She tried to do her little clap back. She says she was wearing the gloves because they were serving food and she was trying to be as hygienic as possible. Wasn't enough for Black Twitter. Black Twitter went in and obviously posted loads of pictures. First of all, posted loads of pictures of her without gloves, meeting with other children, right? And then went on to just have, you know, their fun and make fun of her statement why she was wearing gloves. There were memes of people with like the yellow gloves you use to clean your house, putting on lotion. There was a meme of one guy eating his cereal with a knife and fork, talking about, you know, just trying to be as hygienic as possible. And the list goes on and on. What do you think? Is this a fair assumption?
She came on the video. She had a little 1 minute video talking about, I wore the gloves, and she didn't say because they told her to do it while she was touching the kids. She said they told her to do it because she was dealing with food.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Touching food. And so hygiene with food. But then you just made that completely unhygienic by touching people with your food handling gloves. So it makes no sense. Like, you definitely shouldn't be touching people with your food handling gloves. That's not, you know, come on. I mean, like, your gloves get changed out if you take a bathroom break or if you smoke cigarettes.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like,
you.
So that doesn't hold any water. It doesn't hold any water. She essentially was feeling herself and, you know, has the stigma against HIV and she can't own it. Or her people have a stigma against it and decided to put that on her. And she didn't think that she would be called out on it. She got called out on it. So I'm glad that she did.
But the thing is, okay, first of all, I do, because of who I am and you know me, I do have to call out two reports that I read on this from outlets from that are not necessarily owned, but are run by Black Americans. One outlet, I'm going to call them by name, Clutch Mag Online, ended their article saying that these photos prove that racial tensions remain at an all-time high in South Africa. I was like, all-time high in South Africa? Clutch, where are your editors at?
Okay, all-time.
Y'all couldn't, like, who fact-checked that? And then The Root had this article on it and then somehow felt the need to inform us on HIV rate in South Africa at the end of the article, as if that had anything to do with the article. Do better. However, I do have to say, like, is there any reason to defend her? Because maybe she did forget to take off the gloves.
Maybe she did forget to take out the gloves. I think that the issue is that she also is not being real. We know.
How do we know she's not being real?
People are gonna continue to clown her because either she's clueless or not authentic.
How we know, though?
Because I just explained the Columbo logic of, you know, you don't just like walk around with your food prep gloves handling children. You don't do that.
No, you don't. Okay, so
especially if the gloves are for food prep and food handling.
Okay. But it's just like the thing that you wanted to talk about that I don't want to talk about too much, because in my interview that is our second segment, I also didn't talk about it with one of the people involved. But it's just like the video that got posted, right, of the South African Black women artists who were in Amsterdam, very excited to celebrate the opening of Zanele Moholi's solo exhibition, right? And because they were leaving their Airbnb past the checkout time, you know, white Dutch man acts a fucking fool, throws clothes down the steps, puts his hand on one of people, throws her down the steps too, then wants to act surprised that she got thrown down the steps. And people were on those comments, white Dutch people specifically, who were saying, first of all, they were like, you Americans always calling things racism. Okay, no one in the video, no one posting the video, no one personally affected is American, all South African, one. And then a lot of them went on to say, he says, God damn it, he says, call an ambulance. How do you know it's racism? Well, they know it's racism because he said, this is not Africa. He yelled that at them. He said, you people. And he said other things. So they know what it was about. You don't have to ask them how they know, because they know. But why do people question it? Why is it so hard?
You talking about a culture in Holland of people that wear black face every year and say it's tradition, not racism, even after being censored by the UN. I mean, like, do you know what I mean? Like, the denial there is so thick. It's so rich. It's so layered. It's so, you know, the Dutch were some of the most prominent slave traders. And, you know, they had a little slave trading colony. And yet they subscribe to the same kind of like white innocence that, you know, Germany would subscribe to, in the sense of like, we're European, we're over here, we land opportunity. You know, why on earth would you ever think that, you know, we have a racist bone in their body? Meanwhile, their national party, their right national party, has made significant strides, you know, and
but didn't win. But didn't win, surprisingly. They did not win.
I don't know. If I had a party, a political party that used to get like easily under 10% of the vote, and now I'm a contender. Like, I do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a contender now. I feel like even my loss would be my win. Because that's an uptick. We don't know what's going to happen next time. So this is the country we're talking about. We're talking about a country that has an uptake in racism, but is also suffering from a historical and present day denial of it that is so thick that they literally, you know, wear blackface and say that's not racist. So this doesn't surprise me at all. But this man could have just used the N-word. They would have been like, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, something different.
They do say that. But they do say that. When Ta-Nehisi Coates' book came out, the title of newspaper article had the N-word in it. And then when they were called out about it, they said it means something different because they're not American. They weren't speaking English. It was Dutch.
That doesn't surprise me one bit.
In our second segment, I had the opportunity to speak with Zanella Moholi, a South African visual activist who is currently in London for her opening solo exhibition, Hail the Dark Lioness. It will be at Autograph ABP from the 14th of July through the 28th of October. Let's have a listen.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I'm really excited to meet you in person, but I was introduced to your work 5 years ago at the Documenta in Kassel and was really overwhelmed with the candidness with which you took on the subject of how women are treated in South Africa, queer women, what they experience. But today, I'd also like to talk to you about your new exhibition, Hail the Dark Lioness, that will be on display here at Autograph for a long time, from the 14th, so tomorrow's the opening, through the 28th of October, I think. So, yeah, would you like to tell us a little bit about what inspired this piece, this work, this project? And what it means to you?
First of all, I have to really say I'm excited that I'm in London and having a solo show in London. I've been in the UK before and showcased my work in different spaces, but this is a great honor to be showcasing my work in London. I guess that it opens up a new dialogue and new conversations in which we could share the black narrative in ways that it hardly done, I guess, and also to continue with what I keep on talking about, to take ownership of our voices, to take pride of who we are as black LGBTI individuals in different spaces. And this project is inspired by so many women, human beings, people like me, inspired by my late mother, because some of the pieces that are on show, like photographs that are on show, they speak to women, and most of the names that are given to the characters or the humans on the exhibition, mainly it's either my sister, who recently passed in October 2016, my mother who passed in 2009, and many other black women who never had an opportunity to be in covers of the magazines because of how we either projected or how we either silenced or decision that is made by historians, what matters and what should be projected, be in front or at the back, etc. This is basically a way in which I self-project as my own way or means of expression. And I believe that photography is the best medium in which we could speak volumes if maybe text or textualizing is hard, you know, for one to express. So this is about me. This is about my family. This is about people that I care about the most. This is about women, black women specifically. This is about beauty. It's about politics. It's deeply personal, of course. And I think that as black humans, we haven't done much to on self-representations in which we photograph ourselves and we present ourselves to other human beings who might not think it's possible to do so because of exclusion, because of being displaced, because of all the phobias that comes with being a black body being in different spaces. So this is my own way of like penetrating spaces, claiming spaces, speaking about politics of race, speaking about sexuality, speaking about like gender oppressions, and also speaking about ways in which we could articulate ourselves and invite other people to speak with us or alongside us, because we can't do it alone. They say many voices are better than one. So with this exhibition, I'm coming on board with a lot of experts, writers, poets, scholars, artistic activists, academics, because I believe that it's about time we talk about, you know, race. We speak on racism and do not be scared to say this is who we are, you know, and undo, you know, the notions of that we are not good enough because we are so good, which is what I'm showing there, that this is just me. Can you imagine if you walk into like spaces with a lot of like beautiful faces in space, regardless of how people identify, that would mean revolution in many ways.
And what does the title Hail the Dark Lioness mean to you?
Hail the Dark Lioness, first of all, it's given in Zulu.
Of course.
So I'm just like...
would you like to say it in Zulu?
So many viewers. Like, Hail the Dark Lioness. Somnyama Ngonyama. Yeah, Somnyama Ngonyama. That's it. To the Almighty. It's like given a space and a red carpet to the black lioness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just a fantasy, actually, like giving praises to me, to be, to us. Yeah, it's an invitation. Those who believe in selfies, they should self-represent and hold the cameras, hold the lenses high and relook and rethink, you know, the importance of being.
You're often described as a visual activist. What does that mean?
I call myself a visual activist. It's like I've said it 100 times. Instead of being called a visual artist, because when you take photographs, they say, oh, she's a visual artist. She's an artist. And da, 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 da. For me, visual photography is about activism. I use photography to push a political agenda. Anything that I shoot, that I say with a visual, is based on a politic of being. It's based on politics of occupying spaces that were never meant to be for us. It's based on our senses projected in a sensible manner in spaces where you're told that this is not your space. You're talking too much, you know. You're too much, because you told that you're too much. So for me, a visual activist, it's an act of defiance. I'm speaking, I'm talking, and I don't need to scream. I just give you a picture and tell you that this relates to a particular case in history, of which most people, they choose not to know about those issues, or maybe they don't know about those events. Or other people, they know about the events, but then they never thought that that how they could express to respond to those events. So visual activism is just a way of my expression, artistic expression, speaking out or responding to racism, speaking out responding to sexualities that are there to be, speaking on gender oppression or violations that our communities faced on daily basis, you know. Yeah, so hence I call myself a visual activist. Maybe people might say we ever knew about visual activism, but I want to own that I'm a visual activist. I do not want to divorce or confuse myself and be many things. I don't want to say I'm wearing many hats. Yeah, what I know is that I have managed to use photography to articulate my own personal issues, my own personal experiences, maybe other experiences that relate to my life or that affect me as a human being living in, you know, in or within the community. Yeah.
When you think about how your work is received in Europe and how your work is received in South Africa, would you say that there are any differences?
The huge differences. I get to show more in Europe and in America than at home in South Africa. And my other projects obviously can't be easily consumed in Africa because homosexuality, transgenderism is still outlawed. It's still illegal. So, for instance, I cannot dare to show images of black lesbians in places like Uganda, in Somalia, in Nigeria. There was a show that was showcased at Dark Arts, which was an exhibition in Senegal. And it had to be shut down because my work and work of many other photographers who deal with that sexuality and gender content were on display and it was shut down. So reception is good in Europe, reception is good in America and other parts of the world. Yeah. And I'm just coming with photographs. I'm coming on board. I'm coming as a contributor to knowledge production but with other experts. And I present my visual documents. Then we start speaking to say, why are these people here? Like, and also mainstreaming our issues in places like Documenta, obviously. That's not for converted. It's spaces from non-converted people who are not necessarily queer. That's my mission. Rewriting this visual history of LGBTI individuals in spaces where nobody expects to see them. Because Documenta maybe might be a free space and comfortable space for many, but when you walk into a space with like many faces of black people, boom, bang. Who are they? Who is the artist? No, no, no. Who are they? Who have produced this work? Then we start dialoguing now. Why are they here? For one, because not many people have had the opportunity to show such a content in a particular space per se. Two, how many curators are willing to share, showcase images of what is perceived to be like deviance, you know? So it's an ongoing struggle. You keep on like speaking and if invited to show and then it becomes something else and it's risky to even, you know, be at those spaces or occupy those spaces because you don't know how do other people feel about it. Especially the homophobes, especially the queerphobes, especially the transphobes, especially the xenophobes, you know, who are not expecting, you know, to see, let alone consume such content. In other spaces I used to go to, they'll say this is explicit content. Of just like two beautiful women, you know, bonding. And to me, thinking this is so light, it doesn't even show anybody's genitalia, but it was perceived as explicit. And then it had that PG sign, which was disturbing, you know. As people think or thought that they were going to shock others, in fact, they shocked me. But to think, why why so much drama? Why so much sensationalism? What's this? You know? So it's been like an ongoing struggle. It has not been easy as how you see the images projected. There's a lot of negotiating that takes place before you even see the final products. Yeah.
And how does it feel with your work being shown in places in Europe, for example, with its colonial history and now coming in, as you say, explicitly wanting to take up space, wanting to have these conversations, making a point of the fact that the person behind the camera is, you know, coming from the same point of departure as the person in front of the camera. It's coming from a Black gaze rather than a white gaze. But in Europe, the majority of the people who are now viewing it are going to be white. How does that feel for you?
I've invited a lot of black folks that I met here.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah. And also my intention is not only to... it's meant to be for us, done by us, for us. But also it gives an opportunity to so many creative minds to open up and also want to be in those spaces and hold those people who occupy those institutions accountable for the absence of black imagery, of black positive imagery. And it means that if we have spaces like speaking from this point of view, from UK specifically, even if it's not queer, let's say it's just black content, there's a very important need for collectivism, in which if one of us within the collective do not get that opportunity, bring forth the other people, because we are all creatives. We could say there are four UK-based artists and they know that one of you would get an opportunity to showcase. Come with many others. Come as a crew. I travel with my crew. I document and showcase with my crew, because it's always too much for me to come in those spaces alone. That's one. It's not only for white gays. Even if it's for white gays, they get to learn something and they question themselves. For black gays, it means that we question the artist, we question the activist, we say, how did you get there? How can we work with you? Then it means that collaborations are, you know, essential. We start speaking about, like, how can we do it together? We see that you're in that space. Let's talk about it. Then people start opening up about their own space. How is it that you, members of this community, are not able to access this space? Those are the things that you shouldn't be scared to talk about. Collaborations, collectivism, and supporting each other as much as possible. And then let's all occupy those spaces. On Sunday I was here, and then I was at UK Pride. There are plenty of artists, because Pride is about art. Pride is about art and politics, let alone the other agenda that we push it. Because what we're there for is entertainment, networking, occupying that space.
Absolutely.
Beauty that is in space is so much about art. The colors in space, which when people write about Pride, it's like they write about one side, about like the number of artists that make sure that event looks so good and beautiful and how colorful it is. It's about art activism. So now, how is it that we don't have an exhibition at Pride, which will be seen in one day by more than 2,000 people, 1,000, 2,000 people, etc., etc.? So if I were to occupy that space, I would have created a space in a public space to showcase the queer talent, to showcase the work that is done by black LGBTI people, hence it is London UK Black Pride. There are different strategies, but then those strategies cannot, you know, be executed if people do not think of a vision. We shouldn't only wait for Afropunk. But there was Pride. Would have used that. After Pride, people are running to after parties and so on, which is okay and fair. But within those after parties, we could project the images, you know, and other pieces just as people are dancing and learn to appreciate the visual. So there are so many strategies. Play music, done by black artists and promote them. Sell CDs and DVDs and everything that is created by us and share it. Bring books that are produced by us, even if it's Zines and so on and so on. Which means that when this generation of ours is no longer young, we know that we could go back and refer to something that once existed.
Mm-hmm. It's been documented.
Exactly.
Are there any artists that you would like to collaborate with or that you feel especially inspired by right now?
You know, for me, it feels as if I'm in London for the first time, but it's not. I met a lot of beautiful young people on Sunday, and I wish to work with them. I can't point one person. Mm-hmm. I like to work with a number of people, and I'm traveling with two other South Africans that I like also them to work with your UK youth. I'd say for now, I'm coming back here. Besides this show, I will come back and see to it if I could work with the locals. And it would be through that experience in which I could then say to you, Chantel, this is what we have done. Talking like published materials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also invite maybe those few individuals to South Africa to have a sense of how we work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are a few individuals that are doing things here that I respect. Dancers, poets, but I can't say that one person.
Yeah.
I want to feel my community. I want to enjoy sharing the space and special moments with. I like to share with them the screen of some, you know, documentaries that features the people that are in my photographs and take it from there. So we might have a screening on Saturday night because we're going back to South Africa on Sunday.
Oh, on Sunday. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any last words? This whole conversation has been absolutely inspiring, but are there any last words you'd like to leave us with?
I'd like to finish a project here. That is done with the lookouts. So those are my last things. So I have to be practical about it. Coming back, working together, find ways in which we could all say that, yes, we are, and we matter as black people, regardless of where one is born. But something that could prove it, that togetherness is not just about it's been weird, but to say that let's be practical about what we do. Let's really, truly collaborate and make sure that we share work that we have produced with many other people who might not have access to it easily because of whatever exclusion and force they face in their own spaces. So let's share. Let's share knowledge. Let's collaborate. And do not keep things to ourselves. Share ideas. It's important. In this publication, I have more than 10 writers. So this is already a collaborated, you know, project. Because then it will live beyond the 2 months, 3 months exhibition. Exhibition will be down, but the publication will remain. So that's what I want to do with local activists and artists here.
Okay, thank you so much, Danella, for speaking with me today. And I look forward to the opening tomorrow.
Cool, thank you.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
It came so fast. I feel like this final segment came so fast. I feel like I'm not ready for it.
Oh.
But I will tell you what I'm excited about and what I'm looking forward to.
Yes, please.
So I just made a personal decision not to go to the Afropunks, but I'm extremely excited.
Okay.
Cover it up. Because the lineups are fire. And I can't wait to see the media coming out of the Afro Paris, the Afropunk London.
Afropunk Paris is this weekend. And they're celebrating Black Pride this weekend. There's a lot going on in Paris this weekend.
It's a lot. What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
Oh, I see. Your list is short today.
Short.
This weekend is one of those weekends where it's like, y'all can coordinate. Can we just get a Black calendar for London where all Black events are listed.
Oops.
So we don't have
like
an overlap.
Have project.
So we don't have an overlap of things to do. It's ridiculous. This weekend, Africa Utopia is on at South Bank Center. I will be there. I will be interviewing people. I look forward to it. We also have the Walthamstow Garden Party which is a free concert that I'm trying to make it to because Toots and the Maytals are going to be there on Saturday night, among other people. All kinds of legends are going to be there. And it's free. Did you hear me? It's free. Then we have Ghana in the Park. And because Ghanaians and Nigerians are shady, we also have a Yoruba thing happening in a different park. And I'm like, really? And the parks can be further apart. So for whatever reason, everybody decided this weekend is all about Africa and you got to make a choice what Africa you want to celebrate. So
I love it. But there's enough of y'all in London to do that.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have a little extra cash, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/queertruth. Until next time, peace out.